the National Farm at Home Hour. As a service to agriculture, in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture, Alice Chalmers Manufacturing Company presents the National Farm at Home Hour. For better living, for better farming, for more profit, use Alice Chalmers power equipment for the family farm. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. Oh, it's a little on the cloudy and smoky side. The temperature's in the 30s, but it's a great day to be alive, and I hope it's even more beautiful wherever you are. Years ago, George M. Cohan put a pleasant thought to the music, and the Farm and Home Quartet and Whitey Burquist homesteaders prove it still rings true today. Mary's a grand old name. Gentlemen, on behalf of all the Marys in our audience, I thank you. The 28th National 4-H Club Congress and the 50th anniversary edition of the International Livestock Exposition began today here in Chicago. And those familiar strains of the official 4-H Club March, Pride of the Land, serve to introduce the first of our special studio guests. Our first 4-H guest is 20-year-old Gilbert Blankenship of Yorkville, Kendall County, Illinois, whose excellent 11-year production record in a great many club projects has won him boys' first place in the National 4-H Achievement Program. Gilbert, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the National Farm and Home Hour.
Thank you, Everett. This is one more big event I'll always remember about the 1949 4-H Congress.
It's a week crowded with excitement, isn't it?
Yes, Everett. Next Wednesday night, for example, I'll be at the annual 4-H parade. Then, on Thursday night, the awards will be made at the 4-H dinner.
Now, let's see. You'll receive a chest of silver service awarded by the President of the United States and a $300 scholarship to the college of your choice awarded by the National Committee on Boys and Girls Club Work.
That's right. And let's mention right now that the Girl Achievement winner, Dorothy McHugh of Savannah, Missouri, will receive the same award. The runners-up are Howard Altenoff of New Braunfels, Texas, and Marjorie Ball of Yukon, Oklahoma. They'll each receive a $150 scholarship.
Well, we sincerely congratulate all of you. Gilbert, I'm told that you were a delegate to the 4-H Congress here in 1945 and again last year. How did you get your start in club work?
I began when I was 10, in 1939, with a purebred Poland China gelt. In 1942, I started my dairy project with a Guernsey heifer and built up a dairy herd of 41 head, with 12 cows in production. I also have better than 1,000 chickens, and I've handled 793 swine, 79 sheep, and 12 beef cattle. In addition to poultry and animals, I am now farming 263 acres of corn, 182 of oats, and 102 of legumes.
Well, that's a large order for us. A young man. But your fine 4-H gross income record of more than $99,000 in farm product sales and prize money proves that you're the young man who can do it. You own your own land, Gilbert?
No, sir. I'm now renting 560 acres on a cash basis. I've purchased a full line of power equipment with my 4-H project earnings.
Well, Gilbert, I don't know how you find the spare time, but I understand you also have a top-notch record of 4-H club activity. Being a leader for the past 4 years, preparing many 4-H talks and news articles.
That comes under the heading of relaxation. I've enjoyed it as I have playing basketball with Newark Community High School and other community teams. Lately, though, I haven't had quite as much time for athletics as I did.
Why is that, Gilbert?
Well, sir, last September 3rd, I was married to Lois Nelson.
A 4-H girl?
Why, naturally, Everett.
Well, I can plainly see where that Silver Service Award goes into active duty immediately. Gilbert, double congratulations for winning a fine wife and for establishing a 4-H achievement record. We know that you'll carry on as an outstanding Illinois farmer. That was Gilbert Blankenship, boys winner of the 1949 National 4-H Achievement Program. And now here's a charming 19-year-old young lady named Rose Antonich of Black Eagle, Cascade County, Montana, whose 9 years of 4-H club work have won her top honors in the Girls Leadership Program. Rose, who are the other leadership winners?
The boy winner, Everett, is Don Bowman of Limestone, Tennessee. He receives the same award I do, a $300 scholarship and a beautiful silver trophy. The runners-up were Margie Ruth Sturmer of Horseheads, New York, and Joseph D. Sadler of Barboursville, West Virginia, each of whom will receive $150 scholarships. They all had wonderful records.
Well, indeed they did, Rose. And now we want to hear about yours, particularly how it affected a special problem in your home community of Black Eagle, Montana.
Well, Everett, Black Eagle has a large population of foreign-born parents who more than anything else want their children to grow up learning American ways of life. Since most of these older folks can't speak English, our 4-H leader, Mrs. Martin Amdahl, saw the problem and urged all of us to become individual leaders. So far, 11 of us have led 18 clubs, averaging from 10 to 12 members each. I've led 4 clothing clubs, 2 in foods, and 1 in home living, where I've stressed child care. For the most part, my members are younger girls, and they really love to participate in our projects.
What are some of those projects, Rose?
In the Foods Club, for example, I've taught the girls to follow new recipes and American cooking styles accurately. This has definitely raised their living standards at home.
Which certainly must have appealed to their parents.
Yes, Everett, so much so that we can always depend on them for real cooperation in our activities. To help our members learn the value of materials, I've arranged tours of local stores as well as flour mills and frozen food lockers. Then to help them develop poise and self-confidence, I've encouraged and helped them to participate in clothing and cooking demonstrations and take part in dress reviews.
Rose, that sounds like a worthy, ambitious program that would benefit any community. Now, what are your own favorite kinds of 4-H work?
Home demonstrations and recreational entertainment projects, Everett. 4-H Builder Camp taught me a great deal about folk dancing, games, singing, and handcraft, which I've used as a county 4-H recreational leader and as the leader of the Campfire Girl Bluebird Group. I've also taken part in many skits, stunts, and chorus work in church and community groups and at Great Falls High School. Speaking and writing on 4-H subjects have occupied quite a bit of my time, too.
A well-rounded program of interest and service. And it's brought you many honors before this, hasn't it, Rose?
As state
clothing achievement winner, you attended the 1947 National 4-H Club Congress here. You were state leadership champion last year, and then this spring you were the Montana delegate to the 4-H Club camp in Washington, D.C.
Everett, I feel that 4-H club work is a give-and-take proposition. For every hour of work you give to it, you take away something fine that will be of value to you all your life. Today, the way I make or select my clothing, the manner in which I get along with my associates in my office position, for all these and many more things to come, I can thank my 4-H club training.
Rose, I hope your fine viewpoint inspires other young folks to follow your path of 4-H leadership. Rose Antonich of Montana and Gilbert Blankenschmidt of Illinois, two splendid examples of our country's 4-H youth. On Saturday, December 1st of 1900, the gates of the Chicago Stockyards opened on the first International Livestock Exposition. It was the project of a forward-looking group of agriculture leaders and livestock men. Today, 50 historic years later, the International stands as the giant of its kind, often called the show window of the livestock industry. A man well fitted to describe the International's rise to leadership and influence is Jesse Andrew of West Point, Indiana, vice president and a director of the exposition. Jess, who started the livestock show idea in the first place?
Well, Everett, it's been proved that agricultural fairs are as old as civilized man. The modern fair and livestock show got its start in northern England back in the 19th century, when breeders brought their animals to a common meeting place to compare types and do honor to the best. That competitive spirit showed itself here in America when the 19th century pioneers organized fairs, and for the double purposes of exhibiting improved stock and for advertising their animals for sale.
You might say then, Jess, that even our first stock shows were partly for education and partly for compensation.
That's correct, Everett. And when the International was founded in 1900, it carried on these twofold principles. It has set the pace for the spectacular change from the wasty, tallow-laden steer, ranging from 3 to 5 years of age, which was commonly seen on the markets 50 years ago, to the modern-day yearling and two-year-old, yielding cuts of handy weight size and carrying a desirable proportion of lean and fat. Hog and sheep types have been influenced in the same way.
The International has also established practical types of meat animals from the profit angle, too.
Yes, Ev. The International not only sets standards, but has also established many firsts. The 1916 edition introduced an event called the Boys Steer Feeding Contest, which grew in importance until in 1928, a 12-year-old Iowa 4-H lad won the grand championship. Since then, 9 grand champion steers have been shown by boys and girls. The International also started livestock judging contests for ewes, and such prominent experts and judges as H.H. Kildee and R.J. Kinzer are former winners in this event.
Speaking of the International's history, Jess, I'd be interested to know if any of the stockmen who entered animals at the first exposition in 1900 are still exhibiting today.
Two of them have had livestock in every International since 1900, Everett, and we're honoring them at our Golden Jubilee Show. P.G. Ross of Mansfield, Ohio, showed shorthorns at the first exposition, and he's on hand this year at the age of 72, exhibiting the same breed. Then Robert F. Constant of Buffalo Heart, Illinois, is our other 50-year exhibitor. At the age of 90 years young, he has several loads of Hereford steers entered in the carload classes this year.
Those are two amazing records, Jess. You might say Mr. Ross and Mr. Constant are fairly well sold on the International.
I think that's a safe bet, Ev. In fact, Mr. Ross tells me he's attended all the shows in the British Isles and Canada, and is yet to see any as foresighted and well-managed as the International.
Well, I think that tribute is well-deserved, Jess. We don't need a gilt-edged invitation to attract us out to the International's Golden Jubilee at the Chicago Stockyards, but how about a preview of the features we'll see out there for the next 8 days?
Well, Everett, the first International brought entries of 6,000 animals by a relatively few exhibitors. The 1949 edition features double that number of animals entered by many hundreds of exhibitors from 30 states and 2 Canadian provinces. The International Grain and Hay Show will draw exhibits from 38 states and 5 Canadian provinces. Total premiums offered have gone way over the usual top to $116,000. We're also giving stirring silver trophies to the champion winners in all departments in honor of our 50th birthday.
Well, Jess, the National Farm and Home Hour wants to add its personal birthday congratulations to a great American agricultural institution. May the International Livestock Exposition long continue its outstanding service to agriculture. There's the music that usually sends us on our way to Washington for the weekly Department of Agriculture headlines. Today, though, the man who presents those reports has deserted his Washington headquarters to be right on hand here in Chicago, where agricultural news will be in the making for the next 8 days. We always enjoy this annual visit, Ken Gapin, but without further ado, let's hear the latest in headlines.
Well, thanks, Everett, and here we are in Chicago. FAO's conference program moves along rapidly. Government bought less than 3,000 pounds of turkey this week. Eastern drought last summer was a blow to Jap beetles. Well, we've heard a great deal this week about the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. Its fifth session started in Washington on Monday. Naturally, farm people are especially interested. Director General Norris E. Dodd, former Oregon farmer and a personal friend of many of you, keynoted the opening FAO session. He told the delegates that the present meeting must be a conference of decisions and a 1950 a year for action. In line with this directive, handshaking among the 61 nations that are now members of FAO was soon over and serious discussions got underway. On Tuesday, President Truman talked to the delegates. The president said the FAO delegates that their chief concern was to find ways to meet the need of hundreds of millions for more and better food. He said this job centers around two big problems. The first problem is to produce more food and other farm products. And the second problem is to see that these farm products reach the people and countries that need them. The president described the agricultural revolution that has taken place in the United States through new field crop hybrids such as corn, better livestock, better fertilizers, and amazing new weed and insect killers. Now, this can be done. If this can be done in the United States, President Truman thinks it's even more challenging to consider what can be done, what can be achieved in the parts of the world where modern farming methods are relatively unknown. Now, the president reminded the FAO delegates this was one of the great opportunities toward which he pointed in his inaugural address last January. At that time, he spoke of the need for a bold new program to make the benefits of our scientific and industrial progress available to improve areas of the world that are still underdeveloped. Now, the president said the United States welcomes the initiative of FAO in working towards solving the immediate problem of moving temporary surpluses of certain farm commodities from countries where they aren't needed to countries that need these products badly. And the president said that it's one mark of civilization to produce abundantly. But it's a more important mark to be able to use abundance for mankind's welfare. The FAO sessions that followed the president's Tuesday address have been highlighted by discussion of the proposal for an international commodity clearinghouse. You've already heard a great deal about this. It was debated even on Thanksgiving Day when the delegates met for a three-hour session. Now, Stanley Andrews of the Department of Agriculture, the United States delegate, suggested that the problem be referred to a working party of FAO for further study. He indicated that the United States delegation did not believe the commodity clearinghouse plan was enough to solve the problem, and our delegation would like to see an alternate approach. He referred to accumulation of soft currencies in other countries, and Andrews said he thought FAO countries would find it difficult to have their surpluses in a pool. He believed the long-term solution should be built around helping deficit countries to help themselves. Andrews said the technical assistance program, that's point four, you know, seems a better approach. The British and French delegations also favored further study of the surplus pooling plan. Representatives of all the leading farm organizations are attending the FAO meeting. They'll all have a chance to present their views to the United States delegation. Among the spokesmen yesterday were Iowa's Mrs. Raymond Sayre of the Associated Country Women of the World. Now, if you've heard reports, as I have, that, just before Thanksgiving, the Department of Agriculture bought 700,000 pounds of turkey to hold the price up, here are a few more details. the Department of Agriculture has actually bought about 725,000 pounds of turkey to support the price of the 1949 crop at 90% of parity. Now, the law requires that this be done. But Thanksgiving week, this week, the department actually bought less than 3,000 pounds of this total, 725,000 pounds. The rest was bought over a period of several months, starting way back in August. Now, last year, the price of turkey at Thanksgiving time was 114% of parity. This year, even with a government purchase program, the price is scraping 90% of parity. The reason, of course, is the big turkey crop this year. It's the second largest in our history. 41 million birds averaging 15 pounds apiece. Turkey prices this Thanksgiving were the cheapest since right after the war. Now, Easterners will be glad to hear that the Department of Agriculture entomologists think there'll be fewer Japanese beetles next year. The past summer was the warmest in eastern United States in many years, and rainfall was light. Extremely hot, dry weather usually kills many eggs and newly hatched grubs, and that should mean fewer Jap beetles in 1950. Well, this will be another winter of big feed supplies. The Department of Agriculture reported this week that feed supplies will run only a little under last year's all-time record of over 16 million tons. And that's the Washington Farm headlines.
Ably reported as usual, Ken. And let me take just a moment to add two more news notes here. The 24th Annual Great Western Livestock Show got underway today at the Los Angeles Union Stockyards. The National Farm and Home Hour salutes this important Western States Exposition and all the many stockmen attending and exhibiting their prize animals today through next Thursday. Each year, radio station KVOO in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in cooperation with the county agents and chambers of commerce in that state, holds a Greener Pastures Conservation Contest. The National Farm and Home Hour congratulates these builders and savers of soil fertility. We're glad to have the 1949 Greener Pastures winners in Chicago today. Congressional Medal March, the handiwork of our longtime National Farm and Home Hour friend, Harry Cogan. As we've already heard, the door is open today for the 8-day International Livestock Exposition at the Stockyards Amphitheater here in Chicago. Known as the greatest livestock show in the world, the International this year will more nearly live up to this honor than ever before, for two reasons. First, the great show is celebrating its 50th anniversary, attracting new exhibitors with premiums far above the usual $100,000, plus special golden anniversary trophies for all top winners. Second, choosing of the Grand Champion Steer this coming Tuesday afternoon will be a new television event for the many millions of people in and around 25 of the nation's largest cities. From New York and Boston to Milwaukee and Grand Rapids, from Washington, D.C., and Richmond, Virginia, to St. Louis, Missouri. This history-making telecast is a special National Farm and Home Hour presentation sponsored by Alice Chalmers to give a ringside view of champion livestock and quality meat to the buying public, as well as to all interested farmers within reach of the NBC television network. Whether you attend this year's International Livestock Exposition by television next Tuesday afternoon or in person any day next week, you'll see a great show. It's the World Series of Agriculture. where champion animals and top showmanship are found in every class and division.
Gee, it's all fine and dandy, sugar candy, when I've got you. Then I only see the sunny side, even trouble has its funny side. When you're gone, sugar candy, I get lonesome, I get so blue. When you're handy, it's fine and dandy, but when you're gone, what can I do? Candy, when I've got you, then I only see the sunny side, even trouble has its funny side. When you're gone, sugar candy, I get lonesome, I get so blue. When you're handy, it's fine and dandy, but when you're gone, what can I do?
The boys reviving a bright musical memory of 1930. Fine and dandy. Yes, sir, a fine performance and a dandy time for me to take over with the Department of Agriculture's weekend market summaries. Livestock receipts were below the previous week, due largely to the holiday, but marketings of most classes were above a year ago. Cattle receipts were the smallest since July, as the range cattle movement continued to subside. Supplies of slaughter steers consisted largely of medium and good offerings that sold strong to a dollar higher. Hog prices advanced daily except for the sharp decline Tuesday when receipts at 12 markets were large and the direct movement in Iowa and southern Minnesota reached an all-time record. Closing prices were mostly 25 to 75 cents higher, with instances of $1.50 to $2 higher in eastern Corn Belt. The average cost of butchers for the 3 days was $15.40, compared with a weekly support price guide of $15.05. Slaughter lambs sold steady to a dollar higher. In the cash grain markets, corn prices advanced sharply, ranging 3 to 11 cents higher than a week ago. Wheat markets also turned firmer, with prices advancing 2 to 8 cents per bushel. Barley for feed held about steady, but malting barley declined 3 to 5 cents. Oats and rye prices made slight gains during the week. At Chicago on Friday, number 2 hard winter wheat sold at $2.15 per bushel, and number 2 yellow corn brought $1.29 a bushel. Markets for dairy products were irregular. Demand for most dairy products showed a general improvement over last week. In the egg markets, prices declined sharply on large sizes, but advanced on medium and small eggs. In the live poultry markets, turkeys found good demand at steady to higher prices. The markets were irregular on roasters and fowl, and closed weak on pullets, broilers, and fryers. In the dressed poultry markets, interest centered around holiday poultry, and most supplies cleared well, with the exception of geese. Markets were steady to firm on turkeys, firm on capons, roasters and ducks, but weak on geese. Other classes sold about steady. In the potato markets, demand continued slow and prices at shipping points were irregular. Spot cotton prices were steady to a little higher this week. Middling 15-16s cotton brought an average of 29.81 cents a pound in the 10 spot markets on Friday, or 18 points above a week ago. And that's the markets. Well, next Saturday, we have another date with the National 4-H Club Congress and the International Livestock Exposition. News reports and feature attractions you surely won't want to miss. Until then, here is my thought for the week. Youth may wear and waste with age, but never let it rust while you possess it. As a service to agriculture, in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture, the National Farm and Home Hour is brought to you every Saturday by Alice Chalmers, builders of power equipment for the family farm. Equipment you can own and operate at a profit, regardless of acreage. For better living, for better farming, for more profit, use Ellis Chalmers power. The National Farm and Home Hour is directed by Herbert Latour. Till next Saturday, this is your old friend Everett Mitchell saying goodbye and lots of good luck, everybody.
National Farm and Home Hour came to you today from Chicago. Listen to Grand Ole Opry. It's tonight on NBC. Mm-hmm.